Hello and welcome to Happy Place. I'm Fern Cotton and this is the show that inspires curiosity, thoughtfulness and empathy. Today I'm catching up with Samantha Renk.
I look different, like there's no way of saying I look different, and people can stare and glare and they do. And I remember bursting into tears in the car park, just absolutely exhausted and just fed up and frustrated because still deep down inside I was like, I am wonderful, but why can't the world see that? And it annoyed me because I was like, what do you see when you look at me? Because I genuinely love myself, but you keep telling me time and time again that I shouldn't.
Actress, broadcaster, writer and disability rights campaigner Samantha Renk is one of the people I've gotten to know online over the pandemic. So finally getting to meet her in person at a Central London studio was just the best day ever. Samantha has an incredible innate sense of core confidence, but the rest of the world has done its best over the years to knock that, treating her differently because of her disability. However, she's also, in her own words, gobby. Her experiences have made her gorgeously loud in speaking up about ableism, as well as giving others the confidence to raise their voices. Another thing you'll notice about Samantha is that she is an absolute saucepot. The cheeky laugh on this woman is infectious. She's got the best laugh in the world. I'll be completely honest, I'm not entirely sure when we started recording today's chat. That is the beauty of this show. These conversations are very much ongoing, so you'll join us as we just happen to be discussing nipple hair.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right, let's do the show.
I don't know how I feel about that.
What, that scream?
Yeah, it's a bit weird. Isn't
Whatever, it's like Big Brother, they're all just watching us.
It's a little bit, but it's a little. Hiya! I want to do something really inappropriate, like get my nipple out or something.
Do you want to see nipple, people?
Let's see
where the podcast goes. Let's see where it takes us, babes. Right, are you good to go? Not that anything changes when I start. We just carry on chatting about nipples.
Let's go for it. Let's talk about nipples. I haven't plucked my hair though, yeah. It'll be like a gorilla.
I get a hair that comes out of this mole that I have to. It's like a proper witch.
Yeah. But these grow up to here, man. Yeah, really bad.
I bet it must be really fun to pluck.
Yeah. Yeah, but then I sometimes do it in front of my window and I forget where I live is in the city and there's offices, so I'm sat there in the mirror going like that with my top off.
Samantha, I can officially say we've started the podcast. I think we'll keep that bit in. I quite like that. Talking about nipples and such. This is such a cool day because we've been chatting now for yonks, but this is the first time we've met in the flesh.
Absolutely.
And it's nothing's changed. We've continued.
It's our first date.
And we've already bonded on the phone and on Zoom and on text over cats and clothes and life and nipples.
And pubic hair the other day. Pubic hair. What did I ask you?
Wait, no, I know what it is. There's a line in your book. Bloody hell. There's a line in your book where you say your pubes are so straight, it's like you've GHD'd them.
Yeah, they are. My sister used to like really, really ridicule me about it. She's like, why are your pubes so straight? That's not normal.
Is it like a sort of straight curtain of hair?
It's just like a toupee. And I've got a really podgy vagina as well, so it literally looks like it's a separate person. You know, like a twin, like is it parasitic twin or something? I know, no wonder I'm single.
I'm getting stuck in. You've shared, I'm sharing. Might have got a wave to them.
Yeah, you told me the waving, which I thought you were just being sympathetic to me, like not to make me feel more like a loser.
No, they're not full on curly. Okay. There's a gentle wave.
A gentle wave. A crimp.
Not a crimp.
A crimp.
80s pubes.
Oh my God, bring back crimping.
I crimped my hair the other day.
Did you?
It looks wicked.
I love crimping.
I love crimping. It makes your hair fall out, but it's amazing. Yeah.
But you can just do it if you do like French braids, like if it's damp hair, and leave it in, then you get the same bouffant.
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, we've covered so much already and we're literally seconds in.
We're done. Can I go?
No. We've got so much to talk about because I set you a task that you not only said yes to, but executed so beautifully, and that is to write a book. I said, please would you write a book for Happy Place Books? And I've got it in my hands right now. You're the best thing since sliced bread. How do you feel about this beauty? I mean, look at the cover.
Look, do you know what? I love the cover the most. So we obviously, I work with some graphic designers and they sent me a whole host through and I loved all of them. And I think specifically I said to my agent, I went, I love them, but they're just, what's the word? And I went, they're missing a bit of spunk. Yeah. And I was just like, I can't believe I used the word spunk in an email to all the like the publicist and my agent. I went, but do you know what I mean? It needs a bit of Samantha spunk.
Yeah, it does though.
Yeah. And I think that's what the whole book has. Yeah. And the cover absolutely has. And random bit of fun fact for you if you get the book, which obviously you will. The picture at the back, I'm wearing some leopard print trousers and they are a spitting image of the leopard print on the front cover. And I love how the universe works because I had these trousers for years. I had them altered because I've got wonky legs and I just never worn them. I'm like, And I came that close on at least 4 or 5 occasions of just like getting rid of them.
Never do.
And then when the book cover was finalized, I opened my drawer and they were lying literally on top. And I was like, you are got to be kidding me. So yeah.
They're the best. That's such a gorgeous photo. I love it. And the book's so brilliant because it's this gorgeous combination of being part memoir, but also this manifesto to get everybody. Yeah. You're encouraging vocally people to like themselves, which is a huge problem for most people, myself included, that we slip into self-loathing. We have a nasty voice going on in our heads constantly telling us we should have done this better. You know, that wasn't great. This person doesn't like me, whatever it might be. And you've managed to, over the years, eradicate a lot of that.
Oh, yeah. I'm not by no means, like, I still have my absolute moments of proper...
You're very honest about that in the book.
And one of the chapters in there, it kind of feels like I've just kind of, you know, said all this positivity and then this one chapter sounds like a contradiction, but I wanted to be very honest. Like, I am not perfect, nor would I want to be. I think, and that's fine. And I think when we look for people for guidance and we ask people, you know, like, how have they overcome things or how are they successful? We expect them to be perfect and we expect them to have all the answers and we expect them to say, well, I don't have a bad day. And, you know, this is what I'm going to tell you. And if you just follow these steps, then, you know, you'll be, you know, perfect and happy. And, you know, I say, I don't wake up. I'm not a Disney princess. I don't wake up with like birds tweeping and singing, la la la, which, I mean, that would be kind of cool. But, you know, normally I wake up with a Sphinx cat on my head and I'm, you know, normally teabagging them. Do you know what I mean? Like Bruno literally teabags me, which I talk about in my book. I've got Sphinx cats, by the way. They're so gorgeous.
I mean, you need to just go to Samantha's Instagram because there's many pictures and montages of these gorgeous, gorgeous creatures. Yeah. You put them on your stories. They're so beautiful. And you've got two, Bruno and Lola.
Bruno and Lola, who are more famous than me.
They really went to
an event the other night and I was going, you know, I've got two cats. And someone went, yeah, Bruno and Lola. And I was like, okay.
But cats are the best. This is one of our bonding subjects.
We bonded over our pussies. We really did.
We're back to pussies.
What am I like? I'm not, honestly. I'm like, I need to like rein it in, right? Be good.
No, don't rein it in.
Be good. No, don't rein it in.
We all need more fun and laughter and levity and talking about vaginas and all that jazz. It's hugely important. Obviously, you talk through all different areas of your life, but for the people listening now who think, I want to like myself more, I want to have more self-compassion, what is the starting point? Yeah. What was the change for you in thinking, I know that this is going to help me so massively if I love and accept myself, knowing that I can cope with any situation because I've got my own back. It's so important and not many of us do it.
I think I talk about, again, this, and my sister was really a game changer for me in the sense that she's always had this really innate sense of self-worth, and that's beautiful. And I was born with a disability, and although I was equally born with this kind of, I am freaking amazing, and I genuinely used to feel that as a child. Like, I loved what I call my uniqueness. I loved the fact that I used to get free stuff as a child, you know, like, you know, people used to gush over me and go, oh, isn't she cute? Of course, that was kind of tinged with patronising, yeah, you know, pity and undertones. But for me as a child, I was like, I am the centre of attention and I love it. Like, literally, I was like, why aren't people approaching me? Why aren't I getting free things? Why aren't I getting all this gushing? And it's only over years when people have told me that part of my identity, my disability identity, which is, you know, a huge part of me, a part of me that I'm very proud of, you know, only because they've gone, what a shame she's disabled, and oh, she won't do that, and oh, look at your scars, or oh, look at that. And it's only because they have made me feel over the years that I should feel ashamed, that innate sense of self-worth slowly chipped away. And I think that's fine, because, you know, again, I'm a human being, and what do they say, you know, if you label someone a certain way, that often turns into a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, if you know, what is it, microaggressions are described like dying by a thousand paper cuts. You know, so absolutely, like anyone, as a youngster, as a teenager, I went through my very dark moments. But what I've learned over the years is switching up how you view a situation. And I talk about one incident where, as a teenager, I was probably about 16, 17. I think it's a hard time for anyone. But I would say that I definitely had depression. Definitely, you know, was in not a great place at all. There was a lot of things going on in my life, not just linked to my disability, you know, home life and so forth.
You'd lost your dad by this point as
well.
Yeah,
you know, I was, my mum was struggling, and there was a lot going on.
Yeah.
And my mum and my sister dragged me to IKEA. And I was like, oh, I just don't want to go. You know what it's like. And I just felt like everyone was staring at me. Now, I'm a wheelchair user. I'm 3 foot something tall. I've got curved bones. I do look look different. Like, there's no way of saying I look different. And people can stare and glare, and they do. And I remember bursting into tears in the car park, just absolutely exhausted and just fed up and frustrated, because still deep down inside I was like, I am wonderful, but why can't the world see that? And it annoyed me, because I was like, what do you see when you look at me? Because I genuinely love myself, but you keep telling me time and time again that I shouldn't. And I remember just being in absolute bits, sobbing in the car park. And although I was in this deep depression, one thing that always gave me comfort and something I always enjoyed was fashion and makeup and, you know, kind of looking, you know, fabulous all the time. And that never wavered. And I remember, I can't remember what I was wearing, but I definitely remember I had bright red lips. And my sister, who, God bless her, and she doesn't mind me saying this, she's got the worst dress sense ever. Like, honest to God, like. Like, I just be like, really? And she knelt down next to me and she went, has it ever occurred to you that when people are looking at you, they are looking because you look fucking amazing, you know? And that took me aback. First of all, because my sister was giving me a compliment and we absolutely didn't really get on when we were younger. And I just thought, well, yeah, I do. Like, I do look amazing. And maybe they do. And it's so funny, I was on another podcast last night. I know, controversial.
I will allow it.
Controversial.
Only for you.
But with another disabled person, and we had a similar conversation, and she was like, that is so true. I had someone on a train staring at me. And then as they got up to leave, they went, I'm really sorry to disturb you, but where did you get your shoes from? I love them. And I, whatever situation I am now in, I kind of put myself in that frame of mind. Look, if 10 people stare at me on the street, probably 9 out of 10 of them are ignorant and they are kind of being nasty, or they're being rude, or they're being ableist, or they're being uneducated about disability. But I like to think in my mind that if that one person is actually like, oh my God, I love your handbag, you know? And I like to think of that in everything I do. And I think that is one of the reasons I wanted to work in television, because when I got one of my big breaks, so to speak, in a, you know, chocolate commercial, people would come up to me and be like, can I have a selfie? Oh my God, you're that girl from that. And it wasn't about, I don't see your disability, because that's a whole different subject. It was more about connecting as a human, because they were excited that they saw someone from the telly, irrespective of who they are. And so I, again, you know, in every situation, I take a step back. And I go, okay, don't go down that self-loathing, you know, that negative bias route that we all are inherently driven to do,
yeah.
because that's what we do. You know, we get a million nice messages and then it's you get the one troll
one. Yeah.
and you sit there at night going, oh my God, oh my
Shit,
God, oh my
yeah.
God, yeah. And I look at it rationally, or as rationally as I can in that moment. And, you know, if people are staring at me, I normally stare at them back and smile. And that weirds them out as well. They're like, oh, my God, what do I do now? They're like, you can smile back. And I think the fact that I'm a northerner and I like to chat to anyone helps. And that's worked for me. It doesn't always mean that I don't have bad days. And believe me, when I'm on my period, geez, like, you know,
yeah.
like, look at me the wrong way and I will run you over in my wheelchair. I thought about getting like cattle prods on my wheelchair, my power chair. And then I thought, could that constitute GBH? Is that intent? Is that intent or what? I don't know.
I think it is because you've intended premeditated. You've put those things on.
What if I wasn't aware they were on then? They disappeared.
That could be a loophole. Mm. That could be a loophole.
The fact that I've mentioned it now on your podcast.
Yeah, might underwrite that one. But this is the thing, because, you know, it's a very different situation when you've got certain people with ignorant attitudes, like you've just talked about, microaggressions, ableism, patronising language.
Yeah.
You have to be extra strong to then challenge that, because we've all got that propensity to self-loathe and to, you know, talk badly to ourselves in our heads. But when you've got other people not understanding who you are as a person and having a level of ignorance or a lack of understanding, that's exhausting for a start. That's an exhausting situation. And you cover a lot of that in the book, which again is a whole other layer of the book is, you know, you're not sort of educating people and listen up, this is what you need to know, but you're teaching people about your life and what it means to be a disabled woman and what that means when dealing with other people's ignorance and ableism. That's that's a whole other layer of strength, I think, to bolster your own self-worth.
I used to say, so before I moved to London 10 years ago, I went to university and then I became a teacher and I was like, that wasn't right for me. But I had quite a basic existence in the sense of I was not involved in any of the activism. I wasn't about trying to change the world. I wasn't about educating. I was just kind of me, authentically me, and I suppose as a bipart, people learnt from me without me, as you said, being vocal about it or being online or being that educator. And, you know, I faced, in a disabling world, I faced all these barriers every day. And sometimes I think, I look back, because now I'm like this big, you know, game changer, and I'm not afraid to go, no, that is not right and this is what you should be doing, and I'm very much vocal about that. And I'm proud of that side. But I look back and go, things were weirdly simpler before, because if I faced discrimination, if you invited me to, I don't know, a coffee shop and I got there and then they said, no, you can't come in because you're a fire risk because, you know, there's too many people here. That might not happen when the coffee... No, it did actually happen in a little coffee shop. So that it was too busy and they said, you can't come in or whatever, you know, like the lift's broken.
Or there's just not a ramp.
Or there's no ramp or whatever. And of course, you know, these barriers, disabling barriers look different depending on your disability.
Yes.
I'm talking specifically as from a physically disabled woman. I would just go, all right then, Fern, let's just go next door because they seem to have. Whereas now I'm like, get the manager.
Yeah.
Why? And I'm taking pictures and I'm uploading them onto Twitter and I'm tagging people in and I'm, you know, going, let's get this going. And I know deep down inside that is where my life was heading anyway. And I love that aspect. And I feel like I, going back to that innate sense of self and confidence, I believe that I'm not necessarily a religious person, but I do believe my purpose on this earth is, you know, to be your gobby little git who's going to speak up for other people. You know, I've been given that gift and I will sure as hell be that role model and be that person if people want me to be it. And also, I do love it and I feel that that's my strength. I've not got many, you know, like raw talents. I'm rubbish at music and, you know, like I was rubbish at maths, but what I am good at is talking a lot and kind of fighting for other people and talking on behalf or giving other people that confidence. But, you know, a lot of disabled people that I know particularly might not have that voice. And again, you know, talking recently about care and support. I get a support worker, and, you know, social care is not free. I pay a lot of money towards it. The carers don't get paid a lot, so a lot of people don't really take the job seriously or understand the importance of giving disabled people autonomy and, you know, and seeing it as like a vocation rather than, oh, well, you know, I just pop over and help some disabled person out now and again. Like, there's a real poor culture towards, you know, working with disabled people. But, you know, like, having that voice to even to talk to someone who's caring for you and having that strength to say, actually, you know, what would be great would be this rather than this. And I know a lot of my friends even struggle with that. So if I can be on TV and if I can be, you know, doing what I'm doing and giving them the courage and the strength to articulate themselves without fear of repercussion, without fear of being labelled as this, you know, moaning disabled person, then yeah, I need to keep doing it, even if it means, you know, now and again I do feel burnout. But I think what's nice, and I think the book was very cathartic for me to write, not only did it help structure my life in a way, I was like, oh, that's why I reacted like that, that's interesting.
Oh yeah, you can work through Absolutely. Everything in the process of writing a book. Absolutely. It's wonderful.
But I think now, looking at my life now, I am wanting to do more things for me and managing how I am still a voice and a role model for others, but without that not impacting my own physical and mental health. And also, you know, unfortunately, and you'll know this, when you are in the public eye or when you stand for something and when you want to make social change, there's no off switch. And people don't think that, weirdly, they don't actually see you as a real person a lot of the time. And they think that you are there to serve and to be that voice all the time. And I think it's managing that. And I think the pandemic and writing this book has made me reflect and go, do you know what? I'm not giving up my charity role or anything, but actually I need to start living for me a little bit more.
Well, you have to hold back something for yourself. Mm. So, you know, because it is so depleting energetically what you're doing, and it being 24/7, you really need that. But I think there's a really specific line in the book that I love that I actually underlined, which relates to all of this. And you say, never back down from what you need. Mm-hmm. But then it's a complicated situation because you've also talked about being a bit of a people pleaser previously, which I am hugely. Yeah. And it brings me so much panic to think I have to ask for something to be different or ask for change or ask for something. Mm-hmm. But that's something that you've really had to get over and deal with and go, look, this is what I need. Let's just get it sorted.
And I'm finding my voice now, particularly working with broadcasts, because there's a lot of work that needs to be done to ensure that, you know, disabled people. So, you know, that's 1 in 5 people. That's a big proportion of the population, you know, and disability doesn't just look like me, i.e. physically disabled. And that needs to be represented on screen, behind screen, and that needs to be at senior, you know, levels of work. So I work with a lot of broadcasters as a consultant to try and, you know, ensure that. But even me as a presenter, I've become more vocal in my needs, and it doesn't always go down right. Well, it doesn't always, because, you know, it takes more time sometimes when you're in a wheelchair, and you might need rest breaks, and you might need a different venue because the venue's not accessible. So it's being brave, and it's saying, this is what I deserve.
Yeah.
And this is actually not even what I deserve. This is what it says in the law that you need to provide me.
Yes.
I think we forget that. It's like, oh, it's not, it's the moral thing to do, and it's great to help disabled people. And it's like, oh, hello.
No.
Little thing called the Equality Act here that you are completely ignoring. But, you know, the reality is, and I'm being brutally honest, it doesn't always go down well.
Yeah, this is what, didn't Brené Brown say something, I totally get it wrong, but when you speak your truth, which is what we should all be doing, you're going to piss people off.
Absolutely.
It's just how it is. There's no getting around that.
So when I deliver like my training, I always say, particularly to senior members of staff, because they tend to be more of the harder people to sway, shall we say, I say, leave your ego at the door. There's no room for ego in this cultural shift, this change that we so desperately need. It's not going to get anywhere if you speak for disabled people, if you think that what you've been doing for X amount of years is the right way to behave, because it's not.
Yeah.
And you've brought me in, and you've asked disabled people, you brought us to the table, you know, and it's taken us decades to get to the bloody table. So now we're here. You shut up, leave your ego at the door and listen to us.
Yeah.
You know, that because that's the only way it's going to work. We have a mantra in the disability community that came out from the civil rights movements. And it's, you know, it's nothing about us without us. And it's like, you know, disabled people need to be at the heart of everything, you know, and that's where we go wrong. The amount of accessible bathrooms I go into and I look around and go, well, clearly no one disabled designed this.
It, no.
So, yeah, it sometimes feels like you take 10 steps forward and then 10 steps back. But what keeps me going is when I talk to my deaf, disabled and neurodivergent friends and they say that, you know, I'm not taking full credit, but other people who are influencers like myself with disabilities, you know, that they've made a positive impact in one area of their life. And that, you know, and I'll get lovely messages. I'm sure you do as well. You know, you can be having a really crappy day,
yeah. You
know, and then you'll get this one message on social media.
Yeah.
And it'll be from a parent, it'll be from a disabled person or what, and go, well, thank you for writing about that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for this.
And that's so meaningful. Yeah, You've had that true connection. And I think even if you are having a shit day, you can go, like, every bit of this is worth it.
Absolutely.
For that sort of payback.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Another attribute you're very proud of that, again, I think is something that most of us desire but don't ever quite nail.
I'm wondering where you're going with this one.
Taking risks.
Ah, yes. Yeah,
risk-taking is huge. And you know, many of us are very, we try and just avoid them at all costs because we will write a pros and cons list or we'll think of the worst case scenario. But, you know, back in the day, you know, you talk about this story of moving to London and that being a huge risk in every possible way and not a smooth, easy situation.
No.
Even finding the right flat for you to be able to live in was very, very stressful. But you're always willing, seemingly, to throw yourself into it and go, I'm up for change, I'm up for taking a risk.
Yeah, it's gotten harder as I've gotten older. I'm not going to lie to you, but I think
happens. Everything
does.
Yeah.
But I say yes and then go, shit. It was a bit like when you went, Sam, do you want to write a book? And I went, can't say no to Fern Cotton. And then I sat down like days after and I went, oh, crap, I've got to write a book now.
Whole book.
But I like saying yes to things. I like challenging myself. And I like seeing how things evolve.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the fear of rejection or the fear of failure is more powerful and more consuming and more debilitating than if you actually give something a go and then it doesn't work out. And I think I say in the book, and I was actually quite proud of myself for writing this, I hope I didn't, like, you know, get it from somewhere else. Because, you know, when you read something and then you dream something. Anyway, I'm just totally going to say, I came up with it. You know, the grass isn't always greener, but it doesn't mean you can't make it grow. And I think when people look at me, they find my life potentially fascinating, you know, this inspirational, and, you know, they see the determination and they see that, you know, I'm a go-getter, I'm a risk-taker, etc. And I think what I've highlighted in the book is, yeah, I'm definitely all of those things, but it doesn't mean that when I've said yes and I've, you know, believed in myself, things go hunky-dory.
No.
Believe me, some of the things that I'm most proud of, as in moving to London, like literally quitting my job, didn't have a job to come to with London.
You were a teacher at this point,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I was working in a school. I'd only started living independently, probably 2 years. I'd only started, like, making a cup of tea for myself independently for maybe 2 years before I then packed up my job and moved 200 miles away from my family, you know, and friends and lived on my own in London. And it was that moment where I was like, wow, can't believe you've done that. And that was that, you know, on reflection going, can't believe you did that, Samantha. That's just, like, mind-blowing. But the years that followed were actually some of the most heart-wrenchingly hard, mind-bendingly difficult and exhausting the years that I doubted myself probably the most.
So in those moments, right, because I'm really fascinated about this. So you moved to London. Mm. As you said, it was stressful. You were house-sharing.
Yeah.
You didn't have a proper room at first. You were sleeping in a front room because it was the only accessible flat you could find.
Yeah.
And it wasn't going the way that you'd hoped at the start of this sort of new chapter of your life. when you're mulling over on a bad day, say, or in that situation, when do you know whether to stick it out or to retreat and go back to what is familiar? Because I think many people out there experiencing change or making decisions, that will be on their mind. Do I stick with this or do I give up? When do I give up? Or do I just keep on ploughing forward with this dream, desire or idea? How do you know the difference?
So being a people pleaser can be positive and negative. Mm. And I call it like my alter ego Samantha, the stubborn Samantha. And the stubborn Samantha came about because I wanted to prove the world wrong. I wanted to show that disabled people could do all the things that I'd been constantly told that I couldn't. And in many situations, that has been beneficial because I've been like, you know, I'm going to do this to prove you all wrong. But London was different because, yes, there was an element of that because, you know, I told my mum and I said, you need to sit down. I've got some news. And she went, don't tell me you're pregnant. I went, no, but I'm moving to London, you know, like, so for me, London was the first thing in my life that was for me. Yes, there was an element of, okay, I'm going to do it because you will think I will not be able to do it. But London was my baby, was my project, was something that I had dreamt about over and years and years and over and over. And I wanted that life change. And I think that is, again, being very reflective and doing that switch around of how you think. You know, you sit back and you go, what am I doing this? In your darkest moments when things aren't going right, when you're living on beans on toast, when, you know, you're living with really crappy flatmates or whatever, you know what I mean? Or your cat is eating something, you've got to take him to the vet and you've not got the money because, you know, and you think, is it all worth it? And I think you need to sit down there and actually be very honest to yourself and go, who am I doing this for? Whose dream is this? Is this because my parents want this for me? Is it because my religion dictates this? Is it because as a woman I feel like I need to outperform my, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I think that is what kept me in London as long as it did, because I knew I was doing it for me and my future happiness.
Yeah.
And that made everything worth it. Mm. I mean, and at the time, I didn't think so.
No, I'm sure.
Necessarily.
But thank God you pushed through because your life became utterly extraordinary throughout this process. I mean, it was like...
Oh, well, thank you.
It is. I mean, some of the stories. I mean, but you had all of these crazy, you know, some serendipitous moments happen, but you've had such a roller coaster of a career with, you know, you've been in Boy George's music video. Oh. We've worked with Paloma Faith, the Malteser advert that we've all seen.
And
you
Uncle
in.
Eamon as well.
Working with Uncle Eamon Holmes, who we both absolutely adore. And starring in a film, winning an acting award. Like, all of these brilliant things happened. So thank God you stuck it out. But I mean, in those moments of doubt, because I know that they're threaded through all of these great moments, and you actually say at times when you were having peak success, that's when you doubted yourself the most. What helped you not let that doubt become completely debilitating?
I think I've always wanted to be successful. And when I say successful, that looks different for everyone else. So when I talk about my success, I mean, you know, living independently, as independent as someone can be. I don't think I live independently because I have outside support and I have an adapted flat. So, you know, so that's, I think even independence is a bit of a loose term anyway. But I think I always knew where I was going to be and I needed to hold on to that. And I think also being that voice for other people, and particularly because I was working for charities as well, and being around young disabled people and seeing myself in them. And also, you know, knowing one day that I wanted to become a mother and challenging myself and pushing through a lot of those hard times, you know, was kind of proving to myself, even getting a cat. I got a cat because I wanted to prove that I could look after another being, because, you know, I want to be a mother, but no one's ever asked me if I want to be a mother because they just assume I can't do it. And I think it's always been this tug of war with society, with my own doubts, with my own aspirations, and trying to make them all mesh and match together, you know, to ensure that I stay true to what I really want to do. And I knew I'd be successful, and I think I think the opening bit of the book, it says, you know, I always knew this day would come, writing a book, but I always knew this day would come that I would be, I suppose, oh, it sounds a bit wanky, doesn't it, a public figure. But what I'm saying to say is I knew I would be someone that people would know and people would potentially look up to and I would make social change. So I always knew that. And I think when you know something so deep down inside, it's hard to let that go.
Yeah.
It's hard to let that go.
It helps you push through the challenging times. And I know another very practical tip you've got is to write a list of past achievements to remember, look all the great shit I have done already. Like, that's such a good practical tip. And I've never done that. But I think it's in those moments, which we all have, of imposter syndrome, doubt, whatever it might be, to look back, and it hasn't got to be work accolades, but looking back to all the brilliant achievements you've had throughout your life, friendships you've made, you know, risks that you've taken, whatever it is, that's such a good personal reminder that we're capable of much more than we think we are.
And I think it's, you know, that's something that you can do yourself, but I think it's just looking out for signs that you have got this. So I in my darkest times in London, you know, at times where I definitely wanted to give up, times where I was probably drinking a little bit too much and going out a little bit too much.
Yeah, we
much,
think we've been in the same club at the same time previously.
Possibly.
Back
but
in
we
the
can't
day.
Remember. You know, and I don't know whether it's my dad, I don't know whether it's divine intervention or whatever. I've always been at my lowest and then all of a sudden, so I'll give you an example. I remember I did a magazine article and it just never seemed to come out. And I would say one of my lowest, really low points, wouldn't get out of bed. And then all of a sudden my phone started pinging, going crazy. I eventually got up to look at the phone and everyone was like, oh, you're in this magazine, it's amazing. And it was like nearly 2 years later or something ridiculous like that. And that just was like, right, Sam, get your shit together. And I allow myself, and again, when I speak to my disabled friends, because being disabled can be difficult. It's not inherently a bad thing. Our lives aren't tragedies. But having to constantly think and battle attitudinal barriers, physical barriers, you know, constantly, as you said earlier, it can be draining. Having to constantly say, these are my needs, and not feeling like a burden, it can be really, really overwhelming. But, you know, for me, I give myself my violin days, as I call them. So they can be absolute. I turn into a brat. I like throw my toys out of the pram. I'm a really vile individual to be around for a couple of days. Like, I hate the world. I hate everyone. If you talk to me, I will just like rip your throat out. I'm just, oh, you don't know what it's like to be me. And I just go for it. And like, you'll probably tell when I have these because my tweets get really like aggressive.
Yeah, you're into it.
Yeah,
Twitter's a good place for that sort of anger.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I go, right,
I'm fine.
2 days, right, Samantha?
That's so healthy.
Done.
I don't think we allow, but you know, I don't think we give ourselves the space to just be a bit of a dick every now and again. We sort of beat ourselves up, oh, I should be some sort of saintly character who's moving through life so peacefully and making sure everyone else is okay. It's like, no, there are days where we feel like shit and it's okay. I think giving yourself 2 days, that's a good amount of space.
I mean, that was me being like, sometimes it can be a bit longer, but I think it's about checking in and being within your thoughts and going, okay, right. Okay, like you've done that bit now. Now where you're getting to is not healthy and it's not being proactive.
So don't get stuck in it.
No, and I think that's where people go perhaps wrong, because they're like, well, this is really bad because I can snap myself out of it even though my situation hasn't changed.
Yes, it's a mindset,
isn't it? And it's about being mindful of your thoughts and your feelings and your emotions and allowed to express those emotions. And I think particularly when you're a woman, you know, you can't show emotion, you can't show you're crying because you're weak or this, that and the other. And then you add, you know, the disability onto that as well. But it's about going, okay, right, things still aren't how they need to be. But I now need to take charge. I now need to be proactive and pragmatic. And what I normally find is if I allow myself those 2-3 days a week of really kind of, I mean, it doesn't normally last a week because I think that's danger zone.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I do that, what I find is I come back with a vengeance because I've rested. I've allowed my emotions to come out. And then that sassy firecracker, I'll show you, Samantha comes out, and I've got, all right, I start writing lists and I get glitter pens out and I'm like, right, and I'm on the phone and I'm multitasking and I'm bossing people around going, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and we're going to, you know, and I'm firing emails off. And I think I can only do that because I've allowed myself to be a human and I've allowed myself to say that sometimes things are hard and things are shitty and things are unfair.
Yeah.
You know, I want my little violin out because life is hard and no one, particularly when you, you know, the hardest thing, can I be honest, when I, being a child with a disability is a whole different ballgame from being a disabled adult. Particularly if you're born with a disability, as I said earlier, you get cooed over, you get special treat. I call it special treatment in the sense of, you know, people warm to you more, and you know, you do get, you know, these kind of lovely free gestures, and people are much kinder to you, and we see it in the shape of like inspiration porn, you know.
Yes.
Disabled people get objectified and that is glorified as a child. And then all of a sudden, and this happened to me as soon as I turned 18. So I used to get hydrotherapy. So hydrotherapy is like physiotherapy, being in a pool, a heated pool. I used to get that once a week. And that was, for me, someone with brittle bones who is a full-time wheelchair user, so I don't stretch out. I'm proper chair-shaped. Like, if you pick me up, I'd be like, chair-shaped, you know? which makes interesting in the bedroom. I'll tell you that. That's different. But I used to get this, and I used to love it, and it was beneficial for me, like health-wise. Literally, as soon as I turned 18, they took it away. And this happens a lot. Provisions that were once there, you know, as a child, get taken away because you are now deemed an adult. I'd been told, get a loan out if you want a new wheelchair.
Wow.
You know, the wheelchair I'm sat in at the moment was $4,500. I paid that for that myself. My power wheelchair at home was £9,500. Luckily, the Brittle Bone Society fundraised for that.
Wow.
You know, but you, most of the time you'd get all that provisions as a child. Mm. And I think this is it's a sobering reality. I think going to adulthood anyway, for anyone irrespective of who you are, is challenging because all of a sudden, depending on, you know, how your how supportive your parents are, mm-hmm. or whether you go to uni or you don't, like, it can be a shock in the
huge area.
But when you've got, you know, the added bonus of a disability, all of a sudden, those people who were like, oh, be kind to her because she's a disabled kid, are now telling you to kill yourself online as a troll because you're a drain on society and you're a burden now. Get a job. Do this. Why aren't you a Paralympian? And I worry that even I find that difficult sometimes because I'm like, hang on a minute. You have put me on a pedestal as a child. I didn't ask to be put up there. And now I'm an adult and you see me as a drain and a burden or incapable or, you know, something to kind of fear or X, Y, Z. And, you know, you won't give me the same job opportunities. We don't even have marriage equality as a disabled person. You know, none of this gets told to us when we're children. But all of a sudden you're supposed to just like go, there you go, off into the world.
I mean, it's again one, and we've try to talk about and focus on so many of these huge, overwhelming systemic problems on this podcast. And, you know, most of the time I'm lucky enough to talk to brilliant people like yourself who are out there on the front line dealing with this daily and talking about it and putting all your energy into activism to create this change. And I can't imagine the frustration when things aren't progressing, when things aren't moving forward in the direction they should. And again, it's always hard to talk about mental health and the problems, the emotional problems that these sorts of barriers are creating. Mm-hmm. You can't talk about that without bringing in politics.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're talking about systemic issues, it's like we have to go to the top.
Yeah.
And clearly not enough is being done still.
No.
And it's, as you said, attitudinal as well, but that still filters down from the top.
I get often asked, like, well, things are changing, right? No, it's not even a question. Like, people tell me, things are changing, right? And it's this kind of performative allyship, isn't it? So people want to be patted on the back because they think that they are making a positive change. You know, I often get told, like, and we've got a ramp, like, it's, you know, we should be grateful and give me a pat on the back because I'm doing something positive. And I struggle with that question because, like, things are getting better to what? 10 years ago? 20 years ago? Well, I should hope so, because everything in society has moved on. But disability still seems to be the one that is very much an afterthought.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think, you know, I work with a whole diverse group of individuals. You know, I get to do a lot of panel discussions and I meet some, like yourself, some amazing, diverse people from all different minority backgrounds, etc. And it's that danger of, you know, it's not a victim game. It's not a game of top trumps who gets more discriminated against.
But, no.
But when we talk about disability, what other member of society can't go into a bar because they can't access it, or can't even access higher education because the university doesn't want to change one of the buildings because aesthetically that might ruin the aesthetics of a building, you know? Or they said that, I mean, I ordered a takeaway the other day, and the guy who delivered it, he stood at the door and he shook his head. He went, "Such a shame. God made me perfect and he made you like you."
What?
He went, "I feel so sorry for you." And I was like, "Can I just have my fucking food?" And then he was like, "No, such a shame. You don't live on your own, but how do you live on your own?" I'm like, so what, you know, ask who else would have to go through that? And I think that, you know, I just want my role to be someone who says it as it is, who doesn't sugarcoat it, who's not afraid to say, like, "Do you know what? You're not doing enough." And no, things haven't changed. You might see a couple more of people like me on telly, but that doesn't mean things have changed.
No.
Because I still struggle day to day fighting for my rights every single day.
Mm. And you're someone with a big platform.
Yeah.
And it's still, you know, this is 24/7, as you said earlier, and there are so many people out there, millions of people in the disability community who don't feel heard, don't feel seen, and certainly don't feel supported.
Absolutely.
Because the support isn't there.
No, it's not. Absolutely not.
I mean...
Sorry, I didn't mean to bring down the tone.
No, but this is important stuff. Like, this is important stuff, and we can't shy away from any of it. You know, there's a really important point you made in the book, is that we can't shy away from using the word disabled or disability. Mm. Like, as you say in the book, this isn't a dirty word.
No.
This isn't a word we should sort of whisper or say under our
breath.
No,
euphemisms,
you
know?
This is a word that... It's a neutral word. We say it and we are comfortable with it because the more we have that discomfort, or we're not sure if we should say it or we shouldn't, that is just going to keep propelling all of that undercurrent of ableism that is already at a huge, huge en masse level. So we've got to have these conversations.
Absolutely.
And I want to listen to you, and I want to learn. I want to, because, you know, I'm always coming from the point of view in all these chats.
Yeah.
Tell me everything I need to know.
Exactly.
And I'm going to get it wrong. I'm going to fuck up.
Absolutely. I do too.
Yeah, we all
do.
We all do. But I think there is, not that we're going, right, this is going to change everything.
No.
But there's great wealth and value in us just having decent, honest conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It could be a spark for someone. It could be, like, I remember you texted me saying, "You've got to watch this Netflix documentary, Crip Camp." And so I did. And it was probably one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I laughed, I wept and wept with happiness, happy tears throughout of these beautiful friendships forming and romances and the freedom and the music. It's the most wonderful documentary. I urge everyone to watch it. But we have to keep talking about these subjects. Yeah. Listening is the most important thing. I'm not here to rub it on. I'm here to listen.
Yeah.
And it could be a great springboard for somebody to learn more or to go off and have a think about their own shop or their own, whatever it is, their own business or however they're working. It's, you know, there's value in this.
But I think that's the theme of my book. So I know we've spoken a lot today about disability and I'm grateful because that is something I want people to talk more about. And that is part of me that I love about myself, you know. But I think the overarching theme of, you know, "You are the best thing since like spread" is, first of all, you know, tell yourself that daily that you are
tell
the best
yourself,
thing.
Yeah.
But also that, you know, disabled people are people. We experience love, we experience loss, we want to be respected, we want to be heard, we want to feel valued, we want to have a good giggle, we want to mess up, you know. And I hope if I've done my job right, irrespective of who you are, who reads the book, you know, I want you to go away and go, yeah, humans are humans.
Yeah.
And it's that simple.
Yeah.
So where's the issue? Like, why is it such an issue? I get a lot of people saying, oh, well, we still feel very uncomfortable and I don't want to say the wrong thing to a disabled person. Do you know what? There's no time for ignorance anymore, you know? There absolutely isn't, because you've got the internet, you've got wonderful people like me who will tell you, if you're prepared to listen, your uncomfortability pales into insignificance to my day-to-day. So do you know what? If you say the wrong thing, if you say to me, you know, I don't know, walk this way, Samantha, I'm not going to be offended. And if I am offended, you know what? I'll be able to say, do you know what? I actually prefer you say, roll this way. You know? I mean, I wouldn't, because I mean, that's a bit random. But you know, like, let's just be humans, yeah, and let's just be honest and go, right, that's that. And I, you know, again, if you put your own insecurities about interacting with someone with a disability above that human connection, you could be missing out on, you know, having a new boyfriend, girlfriend, best mate, work colleague. The worst thing you can do is ignore someone with a disability because you think that you might, yeah, you're scared.
Yeah.
Because we pick up on that.
Yeah.
And we would rather you mess up than completely marginalise us and oppress us and isolate us even more.
You're so right. It's all about human connection. I think en masse that gets neglected in and outside of the disability community, that we're scared and we're paranoid and we're scared of how we're coming across and we're scared of what people think about us after we've had an interaction with them, rather than bypassing that to go, oh, I felt like we had a connection there. Like, I think we're all doing that all the time because we're all, and I guess, you know, the obvious things, social media has probably heightened all of that for us, that we're so worried what other people think about us all the time. But we've got to aim for that human connection. Yeah. Like, that's where the gold is.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not scary, am I?
You're the least scary person I've ever met. I mean, I've loved becoming mates with you. I didn't think during the pandemic I was going to make new friends, but I made so many new friends. And I'm only just now starting to actually meet a lot of people. I'm yet to properly meet Jono Lancaster, who's become
mate
over the last couple of years. He was at an event that I was at, but I'm going to meet him at the Happy Place Festival this year. My friend Jambo, who I just met recently, another person I'd been talking to over the last couple of years. It's been a really good time, I think, for that human connection, because we all needed it more than ever, and just sort of like trying to get ourselves out there, even though we're all stuck at home. So I'm so grateful that we've struck up such a friendship. It's wicked.
I know, right? You need to come and visit my cats now, then.
Oh my God, I've got to come and
Bruno,
meet Bruno,
like, honestly,
and Lola.
Yeah.
I cannot wait.
Honestly. Got Bruno a buggy. We'll take them out.
I've seen a picture of this little buggy.
I know.
Do they like going out and about?
Well, Lola just looked at me going, I'm not getting in that. But Bruno, I go on your buggy and he jumps in now. It's so cute.
Bruno.
Bruno.
I was so up for this. It's been a joy talking to you. And
likewise.
I feel utterly proud that Happy Place get to publish your amazing book.
Thank you.
You're the best thing since sliced bread. It's a deeply powerful book for anyone wanting to find that self-compassion, that self-love, that fun, that sense of levity. I mean, I laugh throughout the book. There's many wild stories that you tell and hilarious things that you get stuck into. So go get the book. It's bloody brilliant. And Samantha Renk, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, we need to get a date in the diary immediately. I need to meet those cats. And we probably need to carry on exploring the bizarre growth of other types of body hair too. Why not? Oh, Samantha, thank you so much for that chat. I just loved it. I loved meeting Samantha face to face for the first time. Samantha's book, You Were the Best Thing Since Sliced Bread, is published by us here at Happy Place Books. And it's out on the 21st of July. Go get it. I cannot wait for you to hear next week's episode. There is a lot of laughter and there's certainly lots of learning too. Make sure you're back here for that one by following Happy Place on your podcast platform of choice. Until then, big thanks again to Samantha, to the producer Anushka Tate at Rethink Audio, and to you. I love you very much. Chat soon.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.